Welcome to the Small Batch edition of Pop Culture Happy Hour, NPR's podcast about what we are watching, reading, and listening to. I'm Glenn Weldon. I write about books and comic books for the NPR website. I'm joined here by Chris Klimek. Chris, what do you do when you're not appearing on Small Batch episodes of Pop Culture Happy Hour?
I retreat into the wilderness of New London, Connecticut, and ponder criticism with other critics.
That's true. If Chris's audio is a little iffy this week, that's because he got himself a very fancy-schmancy, very prestigious, but incredibly poorly timed writing fellowship on the Connecticut coastline, so he's going to come back all flinty and homespun from New England when it's time for him to leave. So let's start. Terminator Genesis is the fifth film in the Terminator series. It came out last weekend and took third place behind two films that have been out a while, Jurassic World and Inside Out. Now, that's not a good sign for anyone who wants to see this franchise continue, though it did do huge business overseas, which might be the turning point. A couple things to know going in. The Genesis in the title is spelled a very annoying way, G-E-N-I-S-Y-S. But I don't know about you, Chris, but I kind of forgave that after a few minutes into the film because we learn, this is a minor spoiler, that Genesis is an operating system, and we know that tech people hate vowels. Tumblr, Grindr, Tinder. So given what Genesis is, I'm surprised they didn't go all the way and just call it murder without the E.
Right, M-Y-R-D-Y-R.
There we go. And if you're listening to this Small Batch, you likely know the premise of that first 1984 movie, The Terminator, and the franchise, but here's the basics. In the future, the machines take over. One human resistance fighter named John Connor almost succeeds in defeating them, so the machines send a cyborg called a Terminator, which looks a lot like Arnold Schwarzenegger, back in time to kill John Connor's mother, Sarah Connor, before he gets born. John Connor then sends a friend of his, Kyle Reese, back in time to protect Sarah Connor. Hijinks ensue. Now, Chris, you wrote a piece for Monkey See, ticking off the previous movies in this franchise. Could you run through them quickly and then tell us why none of them matter anymore?
Yes. So in brief, in Terminator 1, we have a hopelessly outmatched, scared and naked puny human protector against the unstoppable Terminator. Sarah's journey is that she sort of, you know, blossoms into this self-reliant warrior figure. In Terminator 2, it's 10 or 12 years later. Sarah's foreknowledge of the future has made her go a little crazy. So she's in an asylum. Young John is a juvenile delinquent hacking ATMs. So, of course, when a programmed to protect him Arnold-style Terminator comes back from the future, he wants to use this new tool to go bust out his mom, but they are being stalked all the while by a more advanced liquid metal Terminator played by Robert Patrick. Wholly successful sequel. Terminator 3 is where things get a little dicey. It's the same old thing again. There's a Terminator that's even more advanced and shapeshifty, but it looks like a lady this time and, you know, kind of who cares. Then in Terminator Salvation, we finally get to the future war that is only teased or shown in flashbacks, or I guess there would be flash forwards, dreams in the other movies, with Christian Bale in full Dark Knight mode playing John Connor, and everyone wants to forget Terminator Salvation. However, with the events of Terminator Genesis, we're starting a whole new timeline in the same way that the J.J. Abrams Star Trek did.
Yeah, I know you're very protective of the word reboot. You don't like it being tossed around willy-nilly, higgledy-piggledy, but here it fits, right?
I am willing to concede that this one is a reboot.
We should throw in a mention of a television series called The Sarah Connor Chronicles, which kind of took place between the third and fourth movies. Didn't necessarily engage with them, I think, but I've never seen it. But a lot of people who listen to this podcast are devout fans of that. They talk about it a lot. And I've had people tell me I should pick it up, but I just haven't gotten a chance to. Now, let's run through the cast of Terminator Genesis. You got Emilia Clarke, who plays Khaleesi on Game of Thrones as Sarah Connor. She's a Brit. You've got Jay Courtney as Kyle Reese. He's an Australian. Playing an American. You've got Jason Clarke as John Connor, another Australian playing an American. And Matt Smith shows up, the 11th Doctor from a little show called Doctor Who. He shows up too, another Brit. So you got, Chris, a lot of subjects of the Crown running around doing their hard American accents, saying things like, give me a break, and seriously. And the only one who sounds remotely natural here is Schwarzenegger. And I'm slapping a big asterisk next to the fact that Schwarzenegger sounds natural. So what do you think in general, this new mythology that they're setting up here, is it doing anything different, anything interesting from what's gone before?
Yeah, it is. I think it's basically kind of filling in cracks that didn't necessarily need to be filled in. One thing that Terminator Salvation makes very clear is that the more of this future that we see, the less interesting that it is. One of the things that the first two movies certainly do successfully is that we only see the future war very briefly at the beginning, always through this lens of a character dreaming. It's a nightmare that Kyle Reese is having in the first movie. It's a nightmare that Sarah Connor is having in the asylum in T2. And here, all the stuff in the future that we were told about as exposition in Terminator 1, it just gets less and less interesting the more of it we see. And that was, James Cameron didn't have any money to make the Terminator. He deliberately designed it so that none of this stuff would have to be shown. There's a great line that the police psychiatrist who has finished assessing Kyle Reese after he's arrested in the first movie says, you know, most paranoid delusions are intricate, but this is brilliant. It doesn't require a shred of proof. You know, so they're basically taking away what was so clever about that initial screenplay by putting it all on screen and depicting it in CGI now.
The AV Club said that this film is taking a fan fiction approach. Take the stuff people like and you ditch the rest. But am I correct? Only from the first two films. There's not a lot here that's left over from the third and fourth film, correct?
That's right. All of the references, all of the, you know, the visual iconography. We see several, you know, very familiar scenes from the Terminator, the original one, 1984, recreated in this movie, such as Arnold's initial arrival in Los Angeles in 1984 at the Griffith Park Observatory, with a twist now. And for generation old fans like me now, there is kind of a cool quality. It's like you're hearing the outtakes in a new reissue of an album that you've loved. And it's like, oh, there's more of this thing that you had this relationship with for so long. After a while, though, the references and the homages and stuff, you kind of realize they're leaning too heavily on that. It's like they don't have enough confidence in the ability to tell a new story.
You know, buddy, I wish I could have seen this with you because I know how much you've been looking forward to it. I know how important this franchise is to you. For me, I don't really have a particular connection to this. I did see The Terminator. I don't think I saw it in the theater. I think I saw it, as millions of Americans have, chopped up on TBS. I did see T2 in the theater, but I haven't seen the other two movies. I like this movie to a certain extent. I mean, I like that this Sarah Connor is someone who doesn't need saving. I like that she's already the T2 Sarah Connor when we meet her here. I like the presence of J.K. Simmons, who doesn't have a lot to do here and does not have enough screen time, but he does what J.K. Simmons was put upon this earth to do, which is to make the stuff around him better. You can feel scenes get better as he steps into them. As this thing went on, creating this new mythology, adding another Terminator to the mix, a phase metal Terminator, I became less invested because it's not that I'm attached to the way things were before, but this felt thinner than what I'm used to from this series. I did appreciate, in theory, this film's determination that we're going to give these people some time to be human. We're going to stop things dead to have romantic moments or comic moments. But the execution was stiff. I think it was some of the performance of Jay Courtney. I thought Emilia Clarke was great, but Jay Courtney wasn't giving me what I wanted. In the end, though, it ticked the boxes for a summer blockbuster for me. I mean, it's egregiously unfair to compare it to Mad Max Fury Road, but I'm going to do it anyway because I came out of that movie, Fury Road, thinking that was bat poop crazy. I haven't seen anything like that. That was revelatory. I came out of this thinking I spent 2 hours in a movie.
Yeah, I do have a list of pros, and you know they kind of range from large to small. I do appreciate that this movie tries to reckon with the implications of time travel in a way that Cameron kind of deliberately chose not to do the first two times around because he just wanted to make a chase movie. He wanted to keep all that stuff off stage. So it does do that, you know, with the discussion of timelines and nexus points and stuff. It just does it kind of stupidly. Mm-hmm. The notion of the T-800 as this overprotective dad who has raised Sarah Connor, except for when he is encouraging her to mate, was very funny. I thought I liked that. Actually, I want to hear if that worked for you.
You know, I've just never been particularly impressed by Schwarzenegger as a screen presence. He's always seemed, stiff, inert to me. I mean, here, that's the role, so it kind of fits. But I wasn't jiving with the comic moments that much. So what do you think? Are you eager for the next chapter? It's not guaranteed because, again, it didn't do particularly well this weekend, at least domestically. Did great internationally. But what do you think? Are you eager for the next one or are you trepidatious?
I can't say that I'm eager for the next one because I think it's going to be more Marvel-y and less Cameron-y. So I guess where I come down is just communicated in the fact that there is a post-credits tease for the hypothetical next movie, and it just made me roll my eyes. It didn't whet my appetite. I just kind of said, oh, really, you're going to do it that way? So can't say it was successful.
Okay, well, full episodes of Pop Culture Happy Hour are available every Friday on iTunes or from your favorite podcast provider or at npr.org. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Glenn.